Just beforehand, just talking with some of the wonderful members of our committee who will just help out, make sure this place actually works and the electricity goes on and this place is clean and there's stuff all around for you. So this is a service which we give here, and that's actually what I want to talk about this evening, about just the spiritual joy of service, of giving. And sometimes, I was joking earlier, oh, I'm getting old now, it's about time I retired. But, unfortunately, the monks don't have a pension. So I can't retire. I've got no superannuation. I've got no possibility of getting any pension. I've got no retirement home for monks or for old monks. And so the whole idea, sometimes like being a monk, it's like you live in a different world. Different rules and different things which you look forward to. And indeed, why retire when, especially in my profession, the older you get, just the more bald you get, the easier it is to, to shave your hair. And also that hopefully the wiser and kinder you get. And I just was focusing on that a few days ago, just how much easier it is to meditate the older I get. Strange. You don't have so many thoughts to think about because you've got not so many plans for your future. You don't worry so much, and all the stuff which other people worry about, you've been there, seen that, done that. So you're not really so concerned with all the things which other people are concerned about in this world. As you've often heard me say, there's so many things, so many wonders of the world which I haven't seen yet. I haven't seen the Great Wall of China. But I have seen the Great Wall of Bodhinyana Monastery, where I live, and that's a long enough walk. I haven't seen Niagara Falls, but I've seen Serpentine Falls. Well, it's the same, it's only water falling down a rock. It's just someone is big, one is small, but one is much more peaceful than the other. So all of these things which people feel they have to see and they have to complete, what they call their bucket list. I don't know why they call it a bucket list. I don't get the idea of buckets and this list of things to do before they die. Maybe you can explain that to me later on. But anyway, that being a monk, you live in a different world where you're not trying to have experiences as much as having contentment. Being happy to be here, rather than it has to be here or there or somewhere else in the world. Learning how to be content, no matter what's happening in your life. This was a saying which the Buddha said to this old couple. He said, even if your body is sick, because they're getting very old, this couple, you know, close to dying, even if your body is sick, your mind doesn't need to be sick. You can be happy. Even if you're sick and in pain. It's a tough thing to do sometimes, you may contemplate. But you know that sometimes what people say is tough, to me is a challenge. Is it really that hard? That if you're sick or if you're tired, that you can't be happy? And I've had this wonderful experience, not only personally, but also this one a lady, her two children, two of her three remaining children, came to visit this afternoon. Just looking around, see if Herbert and Erica are here this evening, but they couldn't make it. But anyway, they probably listen online. That their mother, when she got very sick, I went to volunteer to go to see her hospital. She called me up and said if I could please come in. Because she was having a lot of trouble breathing. I thought it was just bad allergies from working in Bodhinyana Monastery in the early days during the hay fever season. But she was a really tough, you know, Thai woman. And when I went to see her in the hospital, she was in the cancer ward. And I said, oh, what's up with you? And she said, oh, I just got the diagnosis. I've got lung cancer. And he said, and it's terminal. There's nothing they can do. And she had this big smile on her face. And I thought, wow, this is someone who knows about the Buddhism and the Dharma. It's terminal. Nothing you can do about it. So why not smile? And she was so, in a sense, peaceful that she started cracking jokes. That's why I really liked her. Because, you know, she was, even though she was Thai and I was, you know, Western, still, that, you know, I could understand that. She told me, she said, tell all the Thai people they don't need to come and visit me. They just disturb me. Tell me they can visit me as much as they like once I'm in my box. And she was laughing. And, you know, to me, I understood her because I knew her for a long time. She was a very smart, wise woman. But as soon as I went out of her visiting room, this old nurse, she was like the matron, because, you know, she was really senior. I think, was that, they still call that the senior nurses in hospitals, matrons? She was a head nurse. Anyway, she actually grabbed me by my robe and just pulled me into a room. What's up, what's up? I'm so glad, I'm so glad, I'm so glad you've come, she said, because I'm so glad you saw her. She's in denial. Now she's going to die. There's nothing we can do for her. And she's just sitting in bed laughing. I had to tell her. I said, no, she's not in denial. She's been telling me what she wants in her funeral, exactly how she wants it to be done, how to look after her kids and everything else. She's not in denial at all. She's talking about dying and cracking jokes about it. And that stunned this senior nurse. She'd never seen anything like this before. A person who was obviously about to die, it took about 2 or 3 weeks, I think, and then just obviously in some sort of distress, but she was totally at ease with it. I thought, wow, wouldn't you like to be like that? The only other person which I know was this senior monk. Many of you, if you come from Malaysia, remember, they called him the chief monk over there, Venkateswari Dhammananda. He's got lots of books in the library there, Why Worry? And, you know, he was, you know, just when he had cancer, I remember seeing the doctor. His physician said that when he told him there's nothing more you can do, you're going to die, it's terminal, and this monk just burst out laughing. And that really shook the doctor, the only person he's ever seen in his life, once he told that the diagnosis was terminal, nothing more we can do, burst out laughing. Wouldn't you like to be able to do that? Why not? Just getting miserable and sad, that doesn't help you, it doesn't help anybody. And it just shows that each one of us, we have our life to live, and both of those people, that lady who died of the cancer in the hospital and this monk who I knew was a very famous, well-known monk in Malaysia, that both of those, they were on top of their illnesses. Yeah, they must have hurt, but why allow that to take away your happiness? There's a saying somebody reminded me of recently. It's one of my sayings. I say so much, you've got to give me a chance to remember or to forget some of what I say. And what that was, never allow anyone to control your happiness. I love that little saying. In other words, your happiness is in your power. And don't let anyone else take it away. So if somebody calls you really stupid, you know, it's amazing just how people call each other names. They call me names as well. Hey, Baldy. And I don't mind that. What is, you know, my nickname? Who knows my name? It's the real, you know, name should be, if you say it in Thai, it's Chao Kun, I forgot a name, Chao Kun Wisudi Sangwaratera. That was given by the previous king of Thailand. Or it is Ajahn Bamawangso Mahatera. But it's a lot of words to say, isn't it? So instead, what people call me, Ajahn Brahm, it's much easier to say. And I like Brahm much better. You know what the word Brahm means? I don't think I've explained it to some of you. Ajahn means teacher. Brahm, you know what that means? B for Buddhist, R for Roman Catholic, A for Anglican, H for Hindu, and M for Muslim. I do apologize to any Jews here. It's now got a J in there. Because that is something which relaxes people and they remember it then. Oh, I'm old anecdotes. I remember years ago giving a talk at Mercedes College in Perth. Anyone here, any girls from Mercedes College? Anyone? No, okay. Any boys from Mercedes College? Just okay. But anyway, when I went there, the girl, there's two stories here. When I went there, it's a group of maybe 13 or 14 year old girls, it's a girls' school, Catholic girls' school, and these girls were just really pushing the envelope. So I mean, one of them, you know what they did? This, I don't know how many years ago this was. They looked at me and they said, Ajahn Brahm, do girls turn you on? That's what he said in front of the class. I don't know what I said, I think, not you, or something. But anyway, I was remembered in that school because I was walking down Perth. I was walking down Perth a couple of days later, you know, I don't know why, it must have been just after going to one of these dharanas, these blessing ceremonies at lunchtime, because some of the girls were just walking down the road in St. George's Terrace, or could have been Adelaide Terrace, you know, just that area of Perth, and they stopped, they recognized me, said, hey, you came to give a talk at our school a couple of days ago. And I was so pleased, you know, they actually recognized me. And they said, well, you recognize me? And they said, oh yeah, they said, we'll never ever forget a monk called Bra. There's an M on the end, okay? Brahm. All they were doing is to try and stir you up to see what sort of reaction you get. And that was actually, I appreciated that. You know, just testing me out, just seeing just how you'd react when people don't address you in the appropriate manner. But this is Australia. It's an Australia Day weekend. Sometimes there's a time when we actually give people the proper recognition. And there's a time when we do realize that everybody should have a sense of humor, and so we do crack jokes. And so, in the end, that my nickname, which many of you know, is called Ajahn Donut. Donut, yeah. And when I never invented that. Somebody else suggested it. When I asked, why do you call me Donut? He said, well, I'll think about it. For three reasons. Number one, you're round. Oh, okay. They're very polite. They never said fat, they said round. Number two, you're sweet. In other words, I'm always kind to people. And number three, you're holy in the middle. That's Donut. So anyway, you never allow other people to control your happiness, but whatever they do, whatever they say, you bring that up and you make it happy. So this is actually why we learn that sometimes, that why is it that we can so easily get hurt and abused? I mean, just by words. And sometimes people, they try and test us. And sometimes if they say something really funny, oh, well done. Congratulations, that's a really funny thing you said, Ajahn Donut. And so in other words, and sometimes they get a little bit surprised. They try to see your weak points and upset you, but you don't. And so because of that, they actually give you much more respect. And this is especially for somebody who's like in the religious orders. Because, you know, somehow or another, somebody was asking me about religion just earlier. What is religion? Why are religious people? Why am I sitting up here giving a talk to you this evening? And it is because there's something about, well, not really know too much about other religions, but certainly about Buddhism, which you spend a lot of time living really simply, you know, just meditating most of the time, and just having few possessions, having few burdens, you know, being celibate, not sort of being interested in trying to find relationships, you know, with people of other genders and building families up. When you just live such a simple, peaceful life, you do get a lot of wisdom in all sorts of areas of life. And it's strange, somebody asked me even today after lunch, where does wisdom come from? And I said, it comes from silence. And that's one of the things which being a monk, you know, for the nuns as well, that we cherish in monasteries. That's where the places of silence. And even if the monastery is noisy, we just go to a hut or a cave or some quiet place where that silence is so strong. And that silence, that peace, that stillness, we really get into it. But other people get afraid of silence and stillness, they want to make noise. And how often is it in our world, it's just so hard to find quiet places. It's one of the reasons why Australia, just bless the country, is one of the best places for monks. There's still lots and lots of quiet places. Places in the forest, I don't know if you've been to some of the forests in Asia, but they're really noisy. There's so many animals in them. Cicadas at night time. You go to the forest, and say where I live, or just where the Dhammasara nuns live, and it's so peaceful at night time. And there's something about that silence, that peace, I love that. And even, I know just how therapeutic that is. This gentleman came to see me, because if you go to Serpentine, if you go to Dhammasara, after lunch, usually one of the monks or the nuns, they stay up there to receive the guests. So people come up to ask their questions or say this and say that, do some business or just to say how they are. And I kind of like that because I've been here for such a long time. I see many of you and your kids' kids. And 36 years, I've been over 36 years now living in Perth and as a monk. And you get to know so many people. It's almost like your family. And so this one day this guy came up and he said, thank you. And I said, why? Because I didn't recognize him. And I asked him, please excuse me, but who are you? And he said he was the building inspector of Serpentine Jaredale Shire. He'd been signing all of these building applications which we'd submitted, but I never saw him, recognized him. He was in his office all the time. He said, well, I need to thank you, not the other way around. He said, no. Every time in his office, which was in Mundijong, which is about 10 kilometers maybe a bit more than 10 kilometers, 15 kilometers from Bodhinyana Monastery. Every time he got stressed out at work, you know what he did? He got in his car and he drove to Bodhinyana Monastery car park and he just sat in his car. I think he opened his windows. He just sat in his car. He never came out, never asked any questions, never went into the hall. He just sat there until the stress disappeared. He said, thank you for your car park. That's what he said, because he was retiring the next day and he just wanted to finish up, tie up all his loose ends by saying thank you for allowing him just to be in a peaceful place, which just relaxed him. And I thought, wow, that's such an amazing sort of little story, that just how sometimes people get stressed out. And if you get stressed out, if really, just we'll go to our car park, there's plenty of car parking space. Because it was just the atmosphere there was calm, peaceful, and he could feel it. There's something there because, the monks, 30 years or something, we've been, was there at that time, this is 36 years now, we've actually built so much peace and silence and acceptance and kindness there. I just see that even just, 2 days ago, just walking from my room to the other place where we have our lunch. And one of the kangaroos was busily munching. He's on the path. There's no way around him. Or it's actually a her. And she just looked up and then just carried on munching again. I had to almost walk over her. from the back. She didn't move at all. She was just totally at ease with the monks, as if I wasn't there. If another kangaroo had just been round her back, she'd have walked away, but not me. So to me, that's wonderful that no one is actually afraid of you in those thin Bodhinyana monasteries. It's such a peaceful, kind place. Animals feel that, and so do you. That is why it just relieves stress. You don't have to live up to anything. You're not going to be judged. You're not going to be asked for anything. You're not going to be told to do something. You're just going to be accepted. Welcome for coming. That's all. This is going on to, you know, what I mentioned my father, you know, because sometimes people have itchy throats. It's just the last little bit of an allergy which I probably inherited, you know, genetically from my father. And he had a very hard life growing up in Liverpool in England, but during the Second World War. And that just even though I have, there's a slight little sort of allergy from my father, I just love him so much. You know, he died when I was only 16. I learned so much from him. And just one of the things which I learned was, you know, now on the title of my first book, Opening the Door of Your Heart, that particular story, I think many of you know it, you probably by heart. But I always say, as I mentioned earlier, any story which you've heard before, I've heard more times than you have, because they're my stories. But I don't know that the story inspires me, even when I tell it. My old father, just poor, just stopping in a street in Acton, in West London. It was a poor part of the world in those days. And then just telling me, son, however you turn out in your life, the door of my house will always be open to you. That's what he said. And he looked into my eye, and I don't know about you, that some of those events in your life, you can even visualize them. It's like they're traumatic, but they're positive trauma. I don't know why in English, there's no real word for really powerful experiences which you'll never forget. Because it meant something. It meant that my father was explaining unconditional love, no matter how you turn out in your life. And I was only about 14, 13 at the time. I could turn out any which way. He didn't know. He couldn't tell. He said, I don't care. You're my son. The door of my house will always be open to you. And my goodness, he meant that. And of course, it wasn't his house, which he really meant. It was his heart. His house was nothing. It was a really poor little, it was a council flat. Hardly anything in there. I still remember somebody knocking at the door. He hadn't paid the rental things for some record player, so people came to take it away. So we were poor. But anyway, it had nothing to do with his house. It was his heart. I always remember that. It was really important. I try and practice that. So anyone in monastery, the door of Bodhinyana Monastery is open. Come in. What does that do? When you get this total unconditional acceptance, love, welcoming. That is such a powerful spiritual teaching. It means in a place like Bodhinyana Monastery, when people come in there, they're not judged. They can just come in. They're accepted. So you don't have to, what do I need to do to join or to come in here? Is it just for Buddhists? Is it just for this, just for that? I said, no. Anyone can come in. You're welcome. When you do things like that, it's amazing, it changes just the way that people react to life. I think even maybe, I'm not sure, but I love this story because I say it so often about one of the monks which I used to go and see in Thailand. Ajahn Tate, his name was. I had all these important questions for him, and there's sometimes spiritual questions. Sometimes people say, Ajahn Brahm, in your talks, you don't go deep enough. You don't ask these really amazing, answer these amazing questions about the meaning of life, how different religions came about, know where you come from, who's in control, what you should do in life, all these amazing little... I wrote all those questions down once, because this was a really powerful monk. He's supposed to have died 20 years ago, but then he just kept on living and living and living, really wise. And I must admit, even more than Ajahn Chah, who obviously I was his student for years, this monk, he looked like totally enlightened, he acted like it. If you have some vision of a great monk, totally enlightened, totally peaceful, and if you sort of try and imagine that in your head, that would be this monk. Amazing monk. So when I actually went into his presence, with all these questions I'd been writing down and making sure I'd only have this one chance to ask, I asked this question. Actually, as soon as I went into his presence, my mind went so peaceful, I couldn't think of any question. And I realized I didn't need those questions anymore. You had all the answers to every one of those questions. And what was the answer? Exactly what my father said, the door of my heart is totally open to you, little Brahma Wangso. I was a young monk then. I was really thin, malnourished. That was, how many years ago? I think it was about 5 or 6 reigns as a monk then, so that would be almost 30 years ago. Young, malnourished, stupid. But there's something I learned there. I got so quiet, so peaceful, because I was accepted. I didn't need to know anything. I didn't need to be wise. I didn't need to be a great meditator, to be kind. All those things I was trying to do as a monk, which was, I was doing reasonably well, but I couldn't really actually get there. It reminds me of that other little story, just to take it away from like monastic life to your life. Like, I think it was over here, this lady, she came up to me and she said, basically, her problem. She said she was an executive, she was doing quite well in life. She said, this is where I can be in life. This is my goal, and I can achieve this, I'm sure of it. This is where I am. She put her hand down here. And every time I get close to being where I know I can be, I lose it and I go down again. It's just so tough. This is where I know I can be, my potential, and I just can't get there. You know my answer to her, if you haven't seen me do this before, said, this is where you want to be, this is where you are, and it's just so hard. All the effort trying to be where you know you should be. How about moving where you should be to where you are? Then the problem is solved. She said, you don't understand. I said, no, I do understand. It's you who don't understand. Where do you want to be in life? You might struggle hard to try and attain this and get there. But really, have you seen people who get to be top of the tree, get to be famous, get to be rich? I don't know why it is. Every now and again when I look at the news on the internet, all these rich people, they tend to go to jail. What are they doing that for? They tend to be running away from this, running away from that. Oh, it's crazy stuff. So do you want to be like that? Or do you want to be like a nice, peaceful monk or a nun or a member of the Buddhist Society of West Australia, just nice and peaceful, serving, being happy, not being rich, not being poor? And of course, it's the old middle way. But how can you be in that middle way? By learning how to accept yourself. I know many people, they seek for love and being understood. Some people ask, don't you miss being loved? I said, no, there is somebody who loves me very much. My real sweetheart, shall I tell you who that sweetheart is? It's me. I am my sweetheart, I love myself very much. Of course, I'm not a perfect monk. I make mistakes, I do things wrong. Sometimes I say the wrong thing at the wrong time in the wrong place. Yeah, yeah, well, that's life. But I do not sort of feel upset about myself. Oh, you shouldn't have done that stupid Ajahn stupid Ajahn stupid Ajahn. Oops, you see, stupid Ajahn Brahm, a little bit of water now. Stupid. But you know that secretly that's what many of you do. You make a mistake, you're not perfect, and you think, what do I do that for? Why don't you know how to open the door of your heart to yourself? You know how, what peace is all about. Then you don't need to do that anymore. You're perfect as you are. And of course, okay, here's another little story. Just sometimes these metaphors really fit in. I don't know why I keep on repeating them, but they're really good. That was the looking for the perfect tree metaphor. It is, it's a long weekend, you have an opportunity to go for walks in the forest. Don't just go back to the beach. Go into nature and just see the most beautiful tree you've ever seen. Will always be the one which is twisted and bent. Do you like twisted and bent trees? With damage on the bark. I remember the first time I said that at a mental health conference. I had people, no, literally, no exaggeration, crying their eyes out. They were trying so hard to be perfect, trying so hard to cure their illnesses and diseases. And I came along and said, stop it. You are beautiful as you are. And actually, the more damaged you are, the more I like you, the more beautiful you are. And it wasn't sort of, you know, lying, this was true. Find the most beautiful tree in the forest and it's twisted, bent and damaged. So why do people just want to be perfect? So after a while, sometimes wise people just learn to care instead of cure. That's the other thing I just said this afternoon, which just comes up. A wonderful little story of this doctor, I don't think he's here this evening. But is he an artist? But he's probably busy working somewhere. But his parents were old members here, and so he started coming to this place when he was really small. And as he sort of grew up and went to school, did really well at university, did medicine, became a doctor, was an intern or a registrar or something like that, just the beginnings of life, and that was the one who he came to see me one afternoon. He said, I can't do this job any longer. I'm going to have to resign and try another career. And imagine that. All of that work, that study, that hard work. And you know, he graduated and he was a registrar or something. And so what happened? Why do you want to give it all up now, all that hard work? He said, I can't stand it any longer, because he just had a unexpected experience happened to him. One of his patients died. Tragedy. She was really young, about 22, 23, the patient, girl. And it was a surprise to everybody. Later on, and no one made any mistake, it was just, you know, sometimes these things happen. But he had to be the one who told the husband, who never saw this coming, your wife is dead. The girl you've committed your life to, as much as you can know, is no longer there. And your two children do not have a mother anymore. And he said that hurt him so much. He went just so deep inside of him that he said, I'll be so afraid, I can't do that anymore. See the pain in that poor man's eyes. Surprised that he'd lost his wife and his kids, he didn't know how he's going to look after them. And so he came and told me, I have to find some other career, some other job. And that's when I told him, this is part of that, everything I've been saying so far. I said, look, you've misunderstood the purpose of being a doctor. It is not your job. It's not your main purpose to cure people. Your job is to care for people. Not to cure them, but to care for them. Just change one letter in that word from cure to care. Because you will not always be able to cure everybody. You'll be a failure many times in your life if you think that you have to cure everybody. There's no reason why you can't always care for them. And if you make caring the most important part of your job, make sure you care for your patient. You care for their relations, you care for their friends, you care for your fellow doctors and nurses, which unfortunately doesn't happen that much. Make caring the main part of your profession. Then you'll never ever need to feel a failure. When I became a monk, that's what I learnt. Especially become an abbot, I don't try and cure the venerable of his bad habits.
Thank you.
I care for them. They're good fun. And when you start caring for yourself, then amazing things happen. You don't try and cure yourself, you care for yourself. You care for your body, you care for this moment. You see that you're a bent, damaged old tree, and you love it. Then all the problems start to vanish. So when I told him that, just caring is more important than curing, of course, you know, he really got it straight away. And so many other people get that. You know, care for your partner, don't try and cure them. If you try and cure your husband or your male partner, you're wasting your time. Take it from me, I've seen this too. Don't try and cure him, just care for him. And then you know what happens? Then he cures. Then he gets better. Then it changes. Caring, don't cure. And you see that with other people, then you say, hey, maybe I'll try that with myself. Care for yourself, don't try and cure yourself. All your bad habits, even sicknesses. Ooh, that's a bit sort of strong, but it works. So when you make caring more important than curing, when you see that sometimes, oh, these little sicknesses which we have, we're going to get sick anyway. So we just learn how to be at peace with them. It's part of life. It's just how the body deals with infections or whatever. We care for them. We care for our Buddhist society here. So many years I've been the spiritual director of this place. And so many years we've been trying to make it perfect. Where is Dennis? Is he gone? Is he still here, Den? Oh, he's at the back. Okay. Hey, Dennis. I used to be a school teacher before I became a monk, and I know that only the naughty children sit in the back. No, you know, Dennis, our president this year. So no, it is, you know, that we've been trying to make this place a wonderful place. It's not that bad, but still many things to do. You can't cure it. We can't cure our Buddhist society of Western Australia, Dennis. I think you know that. We've been trying for years and years and years, but we can care for it. When we care for it, really care for it, there's no help out, you see something needs to be done. Look after someone who needs to lift back to 3 hours. You can maybe go near halfway, just give them an extra lift, who cares? And just see what you can do. Care for the place. If you've got some time, volunteer to be on the committee or something. Again, what Dennis was saying, we're really trying to get some professional, because it's a big society now. We've got all these monasteries and nuns and stuff, and we want to do even more for you. So we do need help, but we're going to get some professional help this time. So that people who can actually, professionals who can be like operations manager or something. Someone who can actually look after the place, you have to pay him obviously, but that will come. And just in order to do the hard work and the professional work. So our volunteers, people like myself and people like others, we don't have to just worry about, and what does this mean? What does this act of government mean? And what are our responsibilities? So that we can run this place according to all the regulations and laws, and so we're respected by what we do to everybody. So that's what we're trying to do. So it takes a lot of the burden away from volunteers. so each one of you can contribute. And it's a wonderful thing to contribute to the place in which you come. Because it doesn't belong to the government, the Buddhist Society of West Australia. It doesn't belong to me, to the monks, or to the nuns. It belongs to you. This is our place. And when we change our attitude, it's not a place you just come and visit, it belongs to you. So any day you can come into our car park when you're stressed out and just relax. So come and meditate in the hall and just be peaceful. Sometimes you don't even need to ask any questions from anyone, just you be here. And then you get some of the peace, some of the acceptance, some of the idea of what this place is about. We do stuff like that. Oh, you just have a wonderful time here. And it means that you're part of it. So that, you know, your donation just of your time. And it's just cleaning the toilets or just washing the, putting things out or doing other stuff. It's wonderful when we can serve and help out and then you're part of things. So that's actually just how. You don't need to be perfect for that. You know, twisted trees, you can always find something for somebody somewhere. And that's one of the main reasons why when we have this wonderful kindness and care, service, giving, looking after, we have a wonderful fun. It's part of the journey. It's not just meditation and sitting down and becoming blissed out. That's something which somebody asked me also last week. Sometimes they were actually organizing a retreat for another monk. And they said, is it really right that we should be meditating ourselves? Or is it okay doing all this service for others? And I said, just in my life, when I've seen people just worrying about themselves and how much meditation they can do, their own spiritual attainments, they get just so dry. Because it's coming from the sense of self. It's not giving, it's not letting go. It's not, no love, no care in there. It's all about themselves, me, 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 my meditation. But when there's a lot of giving, it's a huge amount of this spiritual energy comes up. And as the spiritual energy comes up more and more and more, you get some more and more energy, more and more happiness, more joy. So when you do start to meditate, whoa, you really take off. And I can relate to that story because I was always wanting to do service for others. Always caring for others, always, you know, being there if I possibly could for other people. And so I thought I was sacrificing my own meditation, but no. When I go on my retreats, whoosh, you really did so much more, so much deeper, because you were letting go. It's not about me, it's about us. And that really took me into some really great deep meditations and realized that this is what the Buddha said, this is what, you know, Ajahn Chah used to say. It's not about what for you, it's always about what's for us. Sense of community, of you disappearing, letting go, vanishing. And this beautiful bliss and happiness which comes when everything starts to disappear. In stillness, in silence, in peace. When that lake in the mountains is perfectly still, then it reflects the moon and the stars accurately, perfectly, beautifully, with no distortion. The wisdom which always comes from stillness and simplicity and peace. Whoa, that is just so cool. Thank you for listening. Okay, that's not good enough. Come on. When you do the three sadhus, have to be big ones. Okay, one, two, three. Sadhu. Sadhu. Big one. Sadhu. That's more fun. Okay, so are there any questions, comments or complaints about anything which I've said this evening? Not from here. What about from overseas? Chris, anything? Maybe from overseas. Because when you talk a lot, you're always bound to offend somebody. Hi, good to see you. Okay, question number one from Sydney, from Norway, and from Newcastle, New South Wales. My grandmother just passed away. She never kept the door of her heart or home open to me, and I don't feel love for her after her death. Is this wrong? No, but it's somehow that your grandmother just looked after your mother or your father, and they looked after you. So your grandmother, you can always find something, even a tiny little bit in her, which you can respect and love. So that's what I would do if that was it's probably my paternal grandfather. I never knew him, but my dad said he was just a really bastard, unfortunately. He got drunk often, beat the kids and the mother. Ooh. But if it wasn't for my paternal grandfather, who I never met, I wouldn't have my father, who was a wonderful man. Thank you. And when I have that beautiful sense of thank you, and kindness, they're dead now, you can't change them, but there must be something in their memory, which stands out. Focus on that. Whenever you're judging anybody in life, be the defense attorney, never the prosecutor. Find mitigating circumstances, why people did that, why they acted in that way. What put them in that situation where they thought that was the best thing they could possibly do? And if you can do that, maybe forgiveness can be there. And you can open the door of the heart or home to her, even though they never did it to you. Okay. Anyway, the next question from Norway. Dear Ajahn, I have a hard time knowing, when does letting go mean letting go of thoughts that give me anxiety? And what does it mean to let go of trying to control the anxiety? What to do? Okay, remember, if you try and control things, that's where the anxiety comes from. So let go of trying to control things, first of all. Then the anxiety, if it comes up, it's not yours, and it just goes away pretty quickly. All those emotional problems like anxiety and fear, they've been in you for a long time. You can't just expect them to disappear immediately, but you'll find when you don't try and control, this is old anxiety coming from the past. And they go, oh, I haven't seen you a while, anxiety. Where have you been? Anxiety, I've missed you. Thank you for coming to visit. Now that gets rid of anxiety. You're not trying to control it, you're welcoming it. Opening the door of your heart to everything. Anxiety, whenever you want to come in, you can come in. I like the idea of opening the door of your heart because doors are not just to come in, they're to go out as well. So when you open the door of your heart to anxiety, it's also opening the door so it goes away again. The door is always open. You can come in, you can go out. That means the anxiety will soon disappear. So you have thoughts that give you anxiety. And so you notice that, you're mindful, well done. So the thoughts which give you anxiety, just see if you cannot just control those thoughts because that gets you anxious about the thoughts. Instead, you understand the thoughts. It's not through control a lot of time, but wisdom. It took a long time to convince all the other people which I was teaching that in Buddhism we don't use willpower and control and violence. And all those things can't go together. We use wisdom power, understanding, rather than controlling. If you use wisdom power, where do those thoughts come from? A person's tired. That's why they get angry. So how about giving yourself more of a rest? But I've got lots of things to do at work. Precisely. So give yourself a rest during the middle of the day. Then you get more work done. And when you go home, you're not so tired. Win-win. It's called, I'll mention this in brief now, but it's called, over in Harvard Business School, they got it from me, it's called an investment of time. By relaxing, resting, you're investing. Half an hour you're not in the computer, you're not doing any work, you're just relaxing. You go back to work after the half an hour, you're full of energy, and you're clear, you get new ideas, much more productive. An investment of time by meditating for half an hour. So that's what you do. So you don't have to destroy the thoughts through willpower and control. Wisdom power, kindness. Then the anxiety doesn't come up. from Newcastle, New South Wales. Why do we or should we care about our lives when they are so fleeting? Well, this life may be fleeting, but you've got another one coming afterwards. So you better start caring about it. But you said, well, I don't believe in rebirth. It doesn't matter what you believe or not. As I keep on telling you, you may not believe in reincarnation in this life, but you certainly would in your next life. So even if you don't believe in reincarnation, still just being kind to your lives in this life, it makes you a happier person. So both ways you win. So why should we care about our lives? Because it makes you happy. Happiness which you don't have to wait until you die to figure out whether you follow the right religion, the right path, the right type of Buddhism, the right type of meditation, the right type of monks, the right type of blah, blah, blah. You should be able to taste the happiness now. To taste peace. If it really is a good teaching, there's something about it which, you know, right here, right now, you know this is something really amazing, wonderful. And you know I don't get anything out of this. I don't get off on just having so many people come on a Friday night. It's a burden. I say I should be retiring by now, but I just enjoy this. I enjoy working my butt off. Oh, no, I actually don't really work. I sit my butt off. I work my larynx off. Well, I'm happy doing it. So anyway, that's why you should care for your lives. So, any questions from the floor here? No? Going? Okay. There isn't, even though we did announce maybe earlier, a week or 2 weeks ago, that maybe there may be some lion dances this evening. But this year, all of those dragon dances, you know, from the Chinese Kung Fu Associations, it is Chinese New Year tomorrow, so we were going to do it today, but they're all, I don't know why, but Eddie said that they were really trying to help out, but they were just all getting married and having problems with families and stuff. Oh, just, like, it's just really hard to get a good lion to come to the temple these days. So for this year, we decided not to have it. So, but instead, we got the didgeridoos because I don't know what's that got to do with Chinese lions and whatever. Anyway, but anyway, Happy New Year to everybody, and may you have a happy time for Chinese New Year if you're going out to Chinese New Year anywhere, and just Happy Australia Day. So may you all be happy and well. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, so now we can bow 3 times, and then we can go do what we need to do.
Arahan Sama Sambuddho Bhagava Buddhang Bhagavantang Abhivademi Suakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Namassami Supatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Sangham Namami.
Yeah.